The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where, as Rihanna so eloquently put it, come here, Ruid boy, boy, can you get it up? Come here, Ruid boy, boy, is you big enough? Because we've got a couple of rude boys incoming with Rui Hachimura and AD on the way. And I think the Lakers may now just be big enough indeed.
That was good. That was good.
I am your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and today I am joined by our second straight triumphant podcast return of the week, still on his paternity leave and fitting this into his busy schedule via a drive-by recording, new dad, Mr. Tommy Alexander. Tommy, how you doing? I hear you have a rude boy now of your own. How's dad life, and is Rui Hachimura the very first words your son has spoken yet?
He hasn't spoken yet, but I will say I do have a very rude boy at home. This parenting thing is, in some ways, it's like a lot easier than what I thought it was going to be like, but in the sleep deprivation way, I mean, there's just, all the parents listening to this probably understand what I'm talking about. There's nothing that can prepare you for it. It's pretty rough. I'm very happy to be sitting here talking to you right now, John.
Yes, let's get your mind off of your rude boy at home and talk about the Ruid boy in Rui Hachimura that the Lakers have just acquired. I did this podcast episode with Alan yesterday, pretty much gave all my thoughts. I was just interested in hearing, now that you've had a couple days to settle on the acquisition and watch some more tape, get hyped and get more lit on Rui Hachimura. Although I will say this is the name that we have been talking about in the last year, because we always try and get ahead of these things. We just never think that Rob Pelinka will actually do them.
No way.
He has. He's done it. He's gotten Rui Hachimura, and to our surprise, it is for very minimal output, very minimal assets came out of the Lakers' treasure chest of assets, quote-unquote treasure chest of assets. It's pretty much just 3 seconds, two of which came from the Washington Wizards' Russell Westbrook trade last season, and then Kendrick Nunn, who, while he has been showing flashes recently, will end up being pegged down the totem pole once guys like Austin Reeves and Lonnie Walker return. So essentially, this is a great flyer. The Lakers get to retain Rui Hachimura's qualifying offer, restricted free agency rights. But yeah, Tommy, what was your initial reaction upon hearing of the trade? I think I was the one who broke it to you. You just saw my text and you were like, wait, what? But what were you processing when that happened? And did you think it was even like in the realm of possibilities that you were thinking about?
No, it was not in the realm. So the very first thing I thought was, oh, this dude got tricked by one of these fake Woj accounts or something. Because I was like, there's no chance that we actually did something like this, right? And I'm not trying to suggest, by the way, that Rui is like some all-star caliber guy that, you know, we got him for a bunch, like the Pau Gasol trade. Like, it wasn't like that, right? But it's just, these are the types of sort of ancillary, like, flyer-type moves that, you know, it doesn't net you a star right now, but, like, these are the types of roster-building moves that eventually can lead you to playoff success and potentially giving LeBron and AD the chance to compete for a championship. And so the fact that Rob did it just blew my mind. I mean, you mentioned like we had talked about this type of thing in the past, but I never thought that it was like in any way realistic, you know? So, yeah. So I think like surprise and, you know, just to talk about like the assets going out, I mean, I still think Kendrick Nunn is like, hopefully he refines his game with the Wizards or, you know, wherever he ends up next year, I guess more likely. But this is a guy who on a team that was starved for 3-point shooting and multiple times in the last like 3-4 weeks, like had 3+ guards down. I mean, there were games where we had Troy, Lonnie, Austin, and Pat Bev down. And even in those types of rotations, Kendrick Nunn was having like a hard time finding consistent minutes. Again, on a team that was like starved for perimeter shooting. So there was not a chance in my mind that we were going to retain that guy next year, even though we have his early bird rights because we've had him for 2 years. But there was no chance we were going to retain him. And to swap him out with 3 seconds, and I like, again, it's like so funny with the seconds because I don't want to say they're meaningless, right? But if like to me, and I think you like Bobby Marks has said similar things, and if a first round pick is like $100 bill, a second round pick is like a single. Like we had 7 second round picks to burn in a trade or in trades, I guess. We burned 3 of them in this trade. We literally just bought a top 5 second round pick for Max Christie just this year. So these second round picks are like frequently for sale. Maybe we're not going to get a top 5 every year, but we just did that, right? And it's like top 5 really is like where the main value is. So if you can buy that on the open market, like, I guess my point is I'm not trying to suggest it's nothing. Like the Wizards can sell those picks and maybe use them if like, I think one of those is like a Bulls pick that might be fairly high depending on where the Bulls end up this year. But it is such a low risk move to get a guy in like Ree, who has been in the NBA for 4 years. He's only 24 years old. He has so much upside still. And even, by the way, if he does not reach his upside because of what we swapped out, it's just like such a no-brainer. I mean, we needed how we've been saying since the summer that we need more 6'8 guys, and we got a 6'8 guy.
Yep.
Again, not to say like for free, but in a way, kind of to me, it was like for free.
Yeah. And, you know, when we were talking about Rui Hachimura last season, it was because we were, you know, trying to cobble up all of these Talen Horton-Tucker trades, right? And presumably it would be like THD plus seconds or whatever for Rui Hachimura. And I don't know, this is the exact type of guy outside of maybe, I can't think of a better sort of flyer prospect to take a chance on besides, you know, everybody was comparing Rui Hachimura to the deal that was more openly publicized in the Cam Reddish thing, but obviously Cam Reddish has only shown flashes. He hasn't put it as consistently together as Rui Hachimura has. And the only other guy that I can think of that I would want a flyer on outside of Rui, who is like a young prospect who hasn't hit his stride yet or hasn't gotten that next contract yet, would probably be Jalen McDaniels of the Charlotte Hornets. But outside of that, Rui was kind of the prototype I was looking for. And I guess we should have seen it coming if we just think hard and take a step back about which GMs only work with Rob Pelinka. you can narrow it down to the Washington Wizards, the Orlando Magic, and the Cleveland Cavaliers, okay? So if we had been thinking under that prism, maybe it would have been more obvious to us. But having said all of that, I will give Rob his flowers for this trade in a vacuum, not his flowers for this season and how he's handled it. If anything, Tommy, I feel like this trade in a vacuum should almost show Rob, wait, you can do stuff like this? Why didn't yeah. Why didn't you preemptively do more stuff like this at the beginning of the season? We could be in a much better place. We could be top 4 right now, bolstering our already competent team with Rui Hachimura, you know, instead of Rui Hachimura being step 1 of improvement. Anyways, I don't want to like knock him down, but all that to say, in a vacuum, I think this would have to be the first trade that I can think of that Rob Pelinka, quote unquote, won. And I'm even including the Anthony Davis trade because even if you can say, well, we won the Anthony Davis trade because we won a championship, obviously, I don't think negotiation-wise Rob Pelinka won because there was nobody else bidding for Anthony Davis, right? We knew where he was going to go. So we outbid ourselves. So in the context of that, would you agree that this is one of the first trades that in recent memory that I think Rob Pelinka has outright won?
I'm going to put the 80s trade aside because that one was just a different beast. Of all the other trades he made, yes. You know, at the time when he did the Danny Green and a first for Schroeder, that felt like, you know, you're getting the sixth man of the year, you know, type of guy back in Schroeder. That felt at the time like it was a great trade. But in hindsight, he lost that trade because he ended up not keeping the asset. So if you recall the first round pick, like, what types of players? I mean, I think that first round pick ended up becoming like Desmond Bane or something. So,
or it should have been like, Desmond Bane. Yeah.
That should have been Desmond Bane. But I just think, like, again, I don't want to oversell the trade. And I think that what I've seen a lot of on Twitter, or more than I would like to see on Twitter from like Laker fans, is people being like, well, you know, it's an okay trade, but like, you know, kind of shrug emoji. Like, does this really do anything? Like, no, these are the types of trades that eventually win you championships. Okay. Yeah. I don't like it. Yeah, it's not a star. I'm not saying we might not even make the playoffs. If this is the only trade we make, by the way, and you know, who knows how AD is going to come back, we still might not make the playoffs. This is not a huge needle moving trade by itself in a vacuum, but it is the right process, which is what we've always been talking about and like harping on and like trying to get, you know, hoping that Rob would eventually buy into this, like doing things the right way and doing things the right way via process. Again, if Rui Hachimura does not develop at all and he literally just does what he's been doing for the Wizards for the last like 4 years, we still won the trade. Okay, yeah. Because Kendrick Nunn wasn't doing anything for us. He wasn't doing anything for us this year, let alone in the future. You now have the chance to re-sign a guy at a hopefully like market favorable, you know, value because he's going to be a restricted free agent. You know, so what team is going to like, you know, this isn't like a DeAndre Ayton situation. Like, there are not going to be a lot of teams lining up to tie up valuable cap space for like 24, 48 hours, however long that is, with an offer sheet to Rui Hachimura in free agency. So you are going to be in a good, you know, situation with him as a restricted free agent to keep him.
Well, not to mention you have him in a market that I think he's going to love, has previously loved, et cetera, et cetera. So
he's going to want to be here, you know, and this guy was like, you can make an argument. And again, whether the Wizards overreached and maybe he wasn't a number nine pick, regardless of whether you think he was a number nine pick or whether he's lived up to that type of hype and potential, he was a consensus lottery pick in that draft. If you go back and redraft that draft, which was very weak in hindsight, outside of the top picks, you know, like your Zions and John Morant's, that was a weak draft. In a redraft, Ree would still be a lotto pick in that draft. You know what I mean? So it's like, I just think like, it is such a no-brainer. We've never had a guy like this who, I mean, like even just looking at like Troy Brown, like the types of flyers that we've taken, Lonnie in free agency mostly, right? Malik Monk, Troy Brown, Lonnie Walker. These were guys that like were not sticking anywhere else, right? Malik Monk was like, people were like, I don't know, maybe he's going to be out of the league soon. And we got him for the vet min, and that was a real flyer. Like, he had not shown anything consistently. Lonnie Walker has been up and down his whole career. Rui Hachimura is career shooting 48%, okay? And he takes a lot of mid-range jumpers. This is not like Montrezl Harrell taking like a lot of, you know, interior. He does take a good amount of post shots, and he takes high percentage shots around the rim, but he takes a fair amount of mid-range jumpers. And for a guy like that to hit 48%, his true shooting percentage has trended up since his rookie season. It is just like, I mean, it is a win. It is such a big win. I really can't like overstate. I mean, again, it's like, I don't want to oversell it too much, but could you imagine if we had, I was talking to you about this the other day, right? Since we acquired AD, we have not had a guy other than your Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, Montrezl Harrell, like centers who are doing a lot of putbacks and dunks around the rim, right? Like, we have not had a more perimeter or mid-post type oriented guy who shot over 46% since we got AD.
Maybe Markieff Morris. I don't remember what his mid-range, but we only had Markieff for like a very short period of time. But
true. And I guess like, True. And that, even though, was like an outlier for him, right? Like, he shot very well with us. I'm talking, when you look at the career numbers, like, we picked up Troy this year, career low 40s. Lonnie Walker, career low 40s. Dennis Schroeder, career mid to low 40s. Like, I understand that Rhee is going to be a work in progress with his three-point shot, although he hit it at a decent volume and a decent clip last year.
No, it wasn't more. It was better than decent. It was like 44% on 1.3 makes in only like 40 games, but yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, maybe a small-ish sample size, but he's shown that he has the potential there, right? So the point is, even if he just hits like low to mid-30s, to get a guy who's 6'8", who could play the four for you, like, you get him in here now, Phil Handy. This dude is athletic, okay? I think, like, one thing that I had a misconception about was, and by the way, when you go back and watch his, like, not just his highlight videos, but, like, his scouting videos from, like, ESPN and, like, those random draft people who do, like, scouting videos on YouTube and stuff, like, he was kind of tagged as, like, an athletic four. You know, maybe, like, more of a three in college because, you know, they had Brandon Clark and they had Sabonis and whatever. But, you know, an athletic four for the NBA. This guy is a lot more athletic than I thought, dude. I mean, he's like sneaky explosive off the floor. He's pretty quick. He has a pretty quick first step that helps him get to like his spots that he wants to get to in the mid range. He kind of reminds me a little bit. I think like what I thought of him before watching more, I think he kind of reminded me of like a Tobias Harris, but actually watching him more, he kind of reminds me more of like a Harrison Barnes, maybe with a little more size. So, you know, if he can develop, like, he does not need to be a wing stopper per se, right? I mean, if he could get like, you know, people forget, right? Kyle Kuzma was like one of the worst defenders in the NBA before we like, or like certainly well below average before we brought Phil Handy in and got him working with Kuz and like our other young guys and Frank Vogel, defensive minded coach, and like winning culture. And Kuz went from like being very inadequate to being actually one of the better wing defenders for his size in the league at this point, like fairly quickly. I'm not saying that's going to happen this year, but like when you start looking forward to next season, it is hard to think of a guy that we could have got for this price who can slot in better next to AD and LeBron. Again, doesn't need to be a star. You know, there's still potential with the salaries we have to get other quote unquote star type players, whatever. If we don't, who cares? Because this is a super high quality role player. And we just have, these are the types of overlooked moves. Like these are the types of moves that the past 3 years, you and I would look at Twitter and be like, wait, you know, Indiana got Rhee Hachimura for like a random expiring end of bench contract and a couple first rounders. Where the hell was Rob for this? You know,
wait. Can I want to add some additional ones. So like, for example, this didn't end up panning out, but the process was right. You used Indiana. Indiana's a good example because last year, I think they traded a second or something for Jalen Smith, for a flyer on Jalen Smith.
Yeah.
And then the Houston Rockets, I know there was a lot more context to this because he was a bit problematic at his original destination, but the Houston Rockets traded a second for Kevin Porter Jr. You know what I mean? So it's like flyers like that. And I feel like this is more, I think Rui is more of the higher profile end of this spectrum. Well, actually, no, Jalen Smith was a lotto pick, but I think you and I have been talking a long time about when is Rob Pelinka going to pull out his Trevor Ariza, Mitch Kupchak trade, you know?
Exactly.
And while this is the higher end version of that, because it's involving a lot of former lotto pick, we just have to work under the prism that Rob Pelinka works under. And there's only like a bar that he's going to stoop to so low, you know, he's still going to look at former lotto picks, you know, but I'll work with that if he's looking for, if he's looking at reclamation projects. And so for once, I think this is finally one we can say and put our stamp of approval and say, okay, this is an actual creative move. It seems like Rob assessed the context and situation, and the Washington Wizards tried to give this guy an extension and he turned it down. You know, the other guys you were talking about, Lonnie Walker, Malik Monk, I don't believe their teams offered them an extension before they hit qualifying offer restricted free agency status, you know? So
yeah.
The Washington Wizards also were dealing with a glut at power forward with Denny Avdija, Kristaps Porzingis, Kyle Kuzma. So it made less and less sense for them to pay, you know, $15 to $18 million to Rui Hachimura to be like a bench player, you know? So given all that context for Rob to swoop in and get ahead of the curve, Yeah, A-plus sort of deal, regardless of whether or not it quote-unquote works out. So let's take it to break, and when we return, let's talk a little bit more about Rui's game and how we potentially could see him fitting into this group.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey folks, thanks for tuning in. We know you guys are lit about the new Rui Hachimura acquisition. We are too. Please join us in our litness by thumb tapping away on your Apple Podcast app or your Spotify app. Find the Lakers Legacy Podcast. Give us 5 stars on either of those apps. Spotify is probably the easiest app that you can do this with. All you have to do is look us up on Spotify. Check out that 5-star dial at the top of our Lakers Legacy Podcast page and hit the 5-star button. We would greatly appreciate it. All right, with that said, ikimasho. Let's get on with the rest of the show. All right, so we are back. Tommy, let's talk more about what stands out to you in Rui's game. You've already talked about his high percentage shooting, especially from the mid-range. You've talked about his sneaky athleticism, which it is kind of sneaky because when I was talking to Alan yesterday, something that surprised me about his game is he's almost like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde in the sense that when he's operating in the mid-range, he looks like an old, like 1990s sort of player. You know what I mean? He's like very methodical getting to his spots. I think that's why he gets that Kawhi comp, because it's almost boring to watch him get to his spot. I really like how he always uses like a forearm shiver to get his man off of him, and then all of a sudden he'll do like a lean back fadeaway jump shot or whatever. And he even has some really nice like hop step into reverse pivot fadeaway jump shots. It's very impressive. He's very skilled in the mid-range, and he knows how to leverage his physique and body to square up properly on all of those shots, which is very impressive. And then on the perimeter, though, you get a different sort of Rui Hachimura if you see him in transition with the ball in his hands. That's when he starts to look like a Tobias Harris or a Harrison Barnes, right? Where you're like, oh, this guy looks a lot more fluid and fast than I thought. Because in the mid-range, he looks kind of loafing and slow. But I realize it's like one thing that I think benefits Rui, if I could compare him to other guys, like similar guys in his vein, like a Julius Randle, is I feel like Rui has a different change of speed in his game. He can change paces pretty well. Like in the half court, you can use him as this almost like old generation power forward, like a LaMarcus Aldridge. But if you want to give him the ball and allow him to operate in isolation, he can also sort of take his man off the dribble. And if you want him to operate off ball, he all of a sudden morphs into a quicker, sleekier wing. So I like that he has these two different sides of him. But yeah, do you have anything else to say about his game? And where do you see him fitting in with Anthony Davis and LeBron James? Because I think right now where he shoots the three-point shot the best, and this is very fitting for our team, is the baseline, particularly like the left baseline. I think he's shooting like 55% from that. And if he can hit that at a decent rate, at the rate he's doing right now, I mean, he's going to thrive on this team. And then obviously his synergy with Russell Westbrook and actually the other three, like Washington Wizards guys, obviously running in transition and, you know, just providing the very practical thing that he can default provide because of his size in terms of putting a body on a guy to, box out and get a rebound. Just be a deterrent in the paint that's longer and taller than 6'5", So those things are already just, default benefits to this team. But in terms of the versatility he provides us, I think we're going to see it a lot in the half court. Transition-wise, you already know what he's going to bring because he's young, he's athletic, he's going to run the floor. But half court-wise, you were mentioning his mid-range jump shot. He is a professional mid-range jump shooter. But as long as we can keep the paint not mucked up and he can still get to his spots in there, we're going to have a different look half court-wise. Yes. In terms of, like, we need a guy to get us a bucket, but it's not going to look like how we've been seeing it in terms of the guy has the ball at the top of the three-point line. It's Russell Westbrook, Dennis Schroeder, or LeBron James trying to break down a defense. It's like, let's give Rui a post-up, Or let's have him face up and take his man off the dribble. Let's run a simple down screen for him to curl off of where he can just hit that 16-footer. The possibilities are endless if we can do this correctly, if we can properly scheme for him and make him an intentional part of the offense versus just, yes, a large portion of what he's going to be doing is going to be spacing on the baseline, but I hope we just don't relegate him to solely that and we take advantage of some of his post skills, his mid-range post skills, and his ability to just curl off a screen, get to his spots, and leverage his physique, So yeah, what are your thoughts on what he can bring on the court?
I think the one thing that's actually impressed me the most about him is his hands. Mm-hmm. He has and this is again, when you go back and watch the scouting of him, it's like, because he's 6'8", he's 7'2", wingspan, he's pretty sturdily built. But the one thing that kind of people hung their hat on in terms of his defensive upside, because his defense is not necessarily there right now, right? But his defensive upside is he has really strong hands, and that is going to help him on both sides. He's going to be running a lot of pick and roll, and his ability to catch the ball, especially catch the ball in tight quarters around the rim and finish with soft touch. We've seen Russell Westbrook make Wenyen Gabriel look like a legitimate NBA player. We've seen LeBron James make Wenyen Gabriel and Thomas Bryant and some of these other guys look like really legitimate scoring threat options, And so Rui can actually do things is the thing. So if he can even hit the thing I like the most about him is if he can even hit 33 to 35% from three, make yourself a reasonable threat to hit a wide open three once in a while. He's not just a one-dimensional, if I'm going to catch the ball on the perimeter, it's going to be to spot up and shoot. He can, a big part of this offense, as we've been talking about all year, and what the Spurs run and what the Hawks have run over the years and the Bucks have run, is drive and kick. So Rui is a guy at 6'8", who can catch the ball, give you a pump fake if his man has to close. And again, his man is going to have to close if he's even hitting low to mid 30s from three.
Yeah.
He can put the ball on the floor, get to his spot in the mid-range where he wants to get, and finish the shot. How often are we seeing Dennis Schroeder and Lonnie Walker and these guys get into the mid-range and just brick mid-range jumpers on the off the dribble?
Or wildly try to force it into a packed paint. Rui's, dude, exactly. his dribble pull-up is so sound. It's lethal. It's crazy. But yeah.
It's lethal. So that's what I'm saying, dude. If he, that was the aspect, that was who he was as a college player. And so it's when I was talking earlier about all these different types of flyers we've taken over the years, Rui is the one of these flyers who he actually has so far done in the NBA what he did in college. It's just he didn't necessarily develop into the type of number 9 overall pick that maybe a team like the Wizards, who were starved for extra talent, would have hoped for. But mm-hmm. That's his game, and he is it's that aspect does not need to develop. That's why I'm even he doesn't change at all, he's already such a huge upgrade over what we had. Because he's going to be able to create such a nice extra dimension. I mean, I was thinking about this actually last night watching the Clippers game, right? And we had a lineup out there in the second quarter, or actually played throughout the game, and it was Russ, Pat Bev, Troy Brown, Toscano Anderson, and Wenyen. Okay. And like that lineup, like if Russ is not holding the ball 90% of the shot clock and forcing passes to guys, like who in that lineup is going to make a play for themselves? I don't know. Toscano Anderson was like feeling himself last night and was trying to do random things off the dribble that I've never seen him try before. And it did not go well, but it's like so interesting now that we have a guy out there that we could put into those types of rotations and be like, yeah, this guy has done this scoring 13 points a game for the last 4 years and has done it at like a decently efficient clip too. So yeah. It's just like, it is very, very exciting. I mean, I think like the big thing for me is not this year, because I think this year he's just going to slot in sort of as who he's been. Mm-hmm. I think next year and beyond is where it becomes exciting. A whole off season of working on his defense with Phil Handy, working on his body, like getting stronger, getting his mental health in check. I mean, like if we want to talk about that stuff, right? Like,
oh yes.
Like, you know, he, as we know, had to miss a substantial amount of time last year because of some sort of undisclosed like mental health problems relating to him, like going back to Japan. And like, I don't know if there was some homesickness or what was going on. Right. But here's like a little background for people who don't know a ton about Rui, right? He grew up in like Toyama, Japan. So not like Tokyo, like a major metropolitan, huge bustling city. That's sort of like, you know, the major metropolitan cities in the US. It's pretty rural. He went from that, like literally being in high school there, to going to Gonzaga, which is like middle of nowhere, eastern, you know, rural Washington state. And dealing with, you know, once you're in college, you're like in the campus life, and he's had his food at campus probably. And like all of his life was around basketball and school. And so that's like probably an easier adjustment for somebody coming from another country. To go from that to being like, I'm going to throw you into Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. would be a culture shock for me to get like thrown into. You know what I mean? It's not like an easy place to live. And I'm not saying that like the NBA guys are living in like the tough areas of Washington, D.C. But I'm just saying that like it's not the same as going from, you know, that to like L.A., which I don't remember if you tweeted this or we just talked about this like offline, but LA has the second biggest, you know, the biggest Japanese American community in the mainland United States. Yeah. Only Hawaii has a bigger Japanese American community. And by the way, Hawaii is like a pretty quick flight from here. So, you know, I think that whole aspect is going to make such a big difference with his development because, you know, Sabonis had like the nice quote to hear, which was when they were in the tournament at Gonzaga together and they were playing at Staples Center, you know, Rui made some comment about like, this is my home, you know, and you can kind of like, again, for like a young, very young man who grew up his whole life in Japan, it's not, you know, it's not like this guy's not Luka Doncic who's been playing professional basketball since he was like 12. Like that is not an easy adjustment for a lot of people. And I think being in LA where he clearly wants to be on a team that clearly wants him. We don't have this like glut of forwards. We didn't like draft him and then in like 3 years in a row acquire more like Kristaps, Kyle Kuzma, you know, Denny and like all these other guys that the Wizards have. So it's like I just think that is going to potentially propel his development so much. And by the way, again, I will always come back to this. Even if he doesn't develop at all, we still won this trade because Kendrick Nunn was not going to do anything for us.
Yeah. Well, we still won this trade. I think even from a fan's perspective, looking at any glimmers of hope for this front office, Tommy, and we're like, can they do right by process in any move that they make since the fumbled Russell Westbrook trade? And they have shown signs of life here, more than signs of life with this Rui deal. And yeah, I mean, props to Rob Pelinka for pulling it off. At this point, he should keep this momentum going, Rob. Like, stop with the platitudes about we're only going to trade our picks if it makes a needle-moving move and there's no in-between. Rob, there is clearly an in-between here. It's not just championship or bust. You showed that with the Rui deal. I understand you're dealing with a more valuable asset in a first-round pick, but there are ways to do this where you are not only focusing on the future, but you're focusing on the present that can bleed into a better future. You know what I'm saying? But I don't want to get into all of that. To close this episode, Tommy, I want to talk about, and throughout this episode, we've kind of hinted at players that we feel like Rui reminds us of, but give me your best case archetype scenario for Rui and give me your worst case archetype scenario for him. And you can even do like a melding and fusion of players. I know you've talked about, you see flashes of Tobias Harris and Harrison Barnes. You can give those as your examples if you want to. But for me, when I was talking to Alan yesterday, I still don't know in my mind whether Rui can actually be one of those sleeky sort of wings, like even a Kyle Kuzma type, because there are times when he's just so bulky that and stocky that I'm like, I don't know. It just feels kind of clunky a little bit. So I think my in-between for this in terms of like a best case archetype scenario is a player that Darvin Ham has worked with before and pretty recently. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't know who you're talking about. I'm very anxious to hear.
So I'm talking about Darvin Ham as an assistant coach with the Milwaukee Bucks. And my best case archetype scenario for Rui Hachimura is a player that you love and a player that I told you would be better than Julius Randle. Still up in the air. But Mr. Bobby Portis, I feel like if Rui Hachimura can get to
Mr.
the point.
BP.
Mr. BP. Bobby Portis's career progression is actually very interesting, right? Because he was not a three-point shooter, and he was going to fall out of the league and end up as this sort of failed Noah Vonleh type. You know what I mean?
This weird guy who beat up his teammates in practice. Yeah.
Exactly. That would have been his tale. Like, I punched Nikola Mirotic or whatever, and that was it. And Nikola Mirotic never came back to the NBA. So...
I punched him out of the league.
He's out of the league, yeah. No, but in terms of how Bobby Portis has sort of morphed into this utility forward who can space the floor at such a high, efficient, reliable level, but still maintains his toughness on the defensive end. I'm not sure if he's a great defender, but he at least shows the effort and stands his ground. Yeah, I mean, he just mucks it up in the paint, right? He rebounds, he has a post-up mid-range game, you can dump the ball down to him, but most of all, he can play his role if need be when all the other star Bucks are healthy and he slots in perfectly because he can space the floor. If Rui Hachimura can become that reliable type of tweener forward, and we saw flashes of this with 40% three-point shooting Markieff Morris in the bubble, if he can be Bobby Portis slash bubble Markieff Morris, I mean, that's all we can ask for, you know? So that's my best case archetype scenario for him. What about you?
Yeah, so I kind of alluded to this, but I kind of view him like Tobias Harris, I think, is like the obvious. I'm not going to say Kawhi. That's his draft comps. I saw was a lot of Kawhi, but I like that just feels silly. Tobias Harris feels like more appropriate, but I think he's more athletic than like a Tobias Harris. And that's why I kind of get the Harrison Barnes. Like, so I kind of view him as a hybrid of those two. I think one interesting thing with him, and this is like kind of telling, right? Because if you recall, I mean, you recall, but the folks listening recall, we had a pick. Like, we were scouting this 2019 draft. This was the draft that we ended up trading the pick to get AD. But before we knew what the pick was, and before we knew we were doing the AD trade, we had been scouting this draft. Not you and me, that too, but, like, the front office. So, like, they knew Rui at the time. And if you look at some of his, like, draft notes in terms of things that he needs to improve or, you know, kind of red flags with him. The big one was he has to improve his aggressiveness on both ends. And I actually thought it was really telling that the first thing Magic Johnson tweeted, right? And Magic Johnson was still involved with us at that point, was Rui is going to be a really great pickup for the Lakers if he can improve his aggressiveness on both ends. So he clearly like remembered like the draft notes on him. And I think like when you see this sort of, you know, you kind of characterize it as like a not super fluid, as not as fluid as Kyle Kuzma or some of these other like more rangy wings that we've seen in recent years. I think I wonder personally how much of that is him not being super aggressive and not fully realizing the athleticism that he has, because, you know, we call it sneaky athleticism, but I think he just honestly forgets sometimes, or he doesn't know how to use it. Like, when he makes these plays, it's like, oh, that's in there. So like, you can do that more often, like play that type of style. And I think he just has to hone that stuff. The Bobby Portis comp, I think is an upside thing is a good one too. I don't know if he'll ever get there defensively, because I think Bobby Portis is so strong, and maybe he really will get there. I don't know. But Bobby Portis is so strong that I don't know that Rui has that kind of upside defensively. But
yeah,
in terms of a worst case scenario, and this is not doing this guy justice because he's had a very good career, but, you know, kind of like current Marcus Morris, Marcus Morris in like his prime when he was like, Marcus Morris has had a very nice career. Okay. But like, you know, a guy who is going to exclusively operate from the perimeter and is too slow to kind of, you know, he's going to hit his shots, but like, he's kind of too slow to get to the rim. And if his outside shot isn't cooking, like, he's not going to give you a whole lot. And again, no disrespect to Marcus Morris. I'm not talking about like his entire, I'm not even necessarily talking about him this year. I just know that he's kind of had a down year in many Clipper fans' eyes. So I'm in my opinion, if that's all Rui becomes, just sort of a mediocrely effective mid-range shooter, then, you know, that wouldn't be ideal. But that would be like sort of the low bar, I think, based on where he is right now.
For my worst case scenario, I went really worst. So like something that I wouldn't want. Because even this version of Marcus Morris, I'd be like, yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah,
So my worst case scenario would be like a Trey Lyles. Because, you know, Trey Lyles' game these days is literally just, I'm tall and I shoot mid-range jump shots. That's pretty much all he does. And maybe to expand it to a relevant Lakers comp, it's almost like Trey Lyles plus Thomas Bryant fusion, because Rui does some Thomas Bryant-y things in terms of Thomas Bryant's a really good jump shooter in the mid-range, and he hustles, he runs the floor, but then on defense, he's like very soft and can get pushed around, he gets blown by, and Rui has those same tendencies defensively. And if he never learns to hone his aggression and stand his ground and really lock in on the defensive end, and he never extends his game from the three-point line, I mean, I could see him being this sort of Thomas Bryant, like, okay, once every four games, he can get us 22 and 15, you know? But it's sort of like a very soft 22 and 15. Kind of why I say Trey Lyles as well, just because Trey Lyles is effective for the Sacramento Kings, but he's like a bench role player who you're just hoping he's hitting his jump shots on any given night, but you can't really expect anything more. So I guess, I mean, it's not that bad, but it's like, we're talking about at this point, minimum guys in Thomas Bryant and Trey Lyles, right? So we're hoping to kind of hit that Bobby Portis, Harris and Barnes, Markieff Morris in his prime sort of threshold. And we hope that he'll be able to do it with Phil Handy and Darvin Ham. So yeah, that'll pretty much do it. I mean, we're gonna see these guys tonight, I think, against the San Antonio Spurs, which is wild to think about in just a couple of hours. AD will be playing, presumably, I think. I don't think there's been a confirmation yet, but it will be interesting to see how Rui slots in with AD and LeBron. I know there have been reports that have said that they potentially see him in the starting lineup once he settles in. My last question to you, and I don't want to take too much longer on this, but like, it still feels a little bit clunky, don't you think? I think Rui would be the four, LeBron would slide back to the three, and Miles would be the five. I mean, I like it from a height and size perspective, but it feels clunky. What about you? What do you think?
For Freudian slip, you said Miles at the five, but you meant AD. Miles.
I mean, AD at the five, Rui at the four, LeBron at the three.
I agree with you that it is potentially a little bit clunky, but I'm more worried about it defensively, actually. I think offensively, again, it's Rui has established more offensively than like how many guys on our roster. I mean, pretty much everyone except for LeBron, AD, and Russ. Like in his very short career, he has proven that he can score points, right? And yeah, he might have the aggression problems and whatever from time to time, and maybe he'll have like his cold nights or whatever. I mean, we'll have to learn and see kind of what his main downsides are as a player once we see him more consistently. But I think offensively it's going to work. I think defensively it could become problematic. I think LeBron at this stage in his career, like, we've been trying to hide him more. And when when he has to slide back down to the three, it's probably better for his body, but I have concerns rebounding. I have concerns, you know, defending at the rim. And these are all concerns, by the way, that like I think will be addressed as early as next season when Rui gets like a full off season of working with this coaching staff and working with like the Lakers players and in terms of learning how to be like a legit player. I mean, like, not to trash the Wizards too much, because Spencer Dinwiddie tried his best to do that. I don't know if you saw his tweets last night after the game, but like, you know, there is probably some truth to that, right? Like, Dinwiddie played on that team and he's like, there's a bunch of guys over there that are trying to play for contracts. And that's different than being on a team with LeBron James and AD who are trying to win. I mean, we've even seen it in recent weeks, right? With LeBron, like, really trying to coach up Thomas Bryant and Wenyan, like, in game, like, oh, like, very demonstratively. So Rui has never really had that before. So, you know, I think it'll all come together offensively. I think the clunkiness defensively is going to be a challenge.
You know, that,
but I mean, like, it's going to work at worst as well as like the Lonnie starting lineup work with Lonnie at the three. And I think it's potentially going to be a lot better because we're not going to be as perimeter oriented, like as 3-point shooting oriented. Like, we have a guy who can hit from the mid post and who can finish around the rim with good hands. So I'm excited from that perspective.
That's interesting. I actually think the exact opposite. We'll have to see how it plays out, because I think the Lakers, as it stands, have been a really good offensive team. And so I think, if anything, he could muck up the offense, but just because of his functional size and him, like, you know, eating up space in the paint, it's almost like he can just form a wall down there regardless. Maybe we'll get eaten up at the 3-point line, but I feel like he can only help the defense, because that starting lineup with LeBron James and Thomas Bryant, you swap him out for Anthony Davis and Rui Hachimura, I can't really see how the defense improve.
I mean, AD is going to clean up a lot. I guess, like, with my concern with Rui as a defender is, at least when you're going small and you're starting Lonnie at the three, like, or Austin Reeves or something like that, like, those guys can compete on the perimeter. Rui is not going to be able to compete on the perimeter. He's not going to have to, because I think we're going to play him at the four and slot LeBron down. But I don't, like, the problem is, can Rui compete in the post? And I think that's, like, a big thing about, like, all these people talking about his aggression. Like, this guy is 6'8 with a 7'2 wingspan and is a solid 230, 235. Like, I don't think he realizes the NBA body that he has, and he needs to use it. Like, he has to be really, really physical, and I just don't think he's there yet.
Yeah, although I have seen flashes, I think his best spot is defending in the post, actually, because in kind of the same way that he operates in the mid post on the offensive end and leverages gaining that body contact, because he likes to feel people's bodies, because he can square up whenever he wants to. I think he does that sometimes on the defensive end as well. I've seen clips of him, you know, stopping Giannis when Giannis is trying to post up, although, you know, Giannis is a pretty clunky post up player. But I think that's eventually going to be his best spot if he can just become more consistent, hone that aggression, stand his ground, because he is a very strong body. It's just about learning how to leverage that in smart and savvy ways. But yeah, with that said, we are going to find out soon enough, as early as tonight, and then we get to face the Boston Celtics with all of their wingy players, and we'll sort of see how this starts to look and what we can be excited about for the future. So yeah, with that said, more to come. Trade deadline is coming up. Tommy, go attend to your rude boy, and let's go watch some Rui Hachimura, baby. Let's go. Konnichiwa, as the Washington Wizards commentators say. And this is appropriate because it is afternoon that we're recording this, so konnichiwa makes sense. So, Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
Laters.